back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, Charles Hall joining us in a few more segments. Leslie Kane is answering your questions. Chris has mined through the various queries in our question bank area of forum.theparacast.com. He's trying to combine questions, keep them within a specific topic range so we don't get overwhelmed. Chris, what's next?
There are some questions that have to do with your own personal beliefs around this or your intuition possibly around this subject. And here's a pretty good question from Ezekiel. I think he kind of hit the nail on the head on possibly how to pose this question to you. What is your opinion in evolving around the UAP subject or UFOs? Where do you position yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the phenomena somehow originates from Earth and 10 being that it's extraterrestrial? And has this view or intuition or kind of opinion, has it shifted since your book has come out?
Well, no, I wouldn't say my opinion has shifted at all since the book has come out. I mean, the more I learn, the more I realize that we have a real phenomenon that we can't explain. I can say that. But scale of 1 to 10, I don't know, maybe 50-50. You know, the point is that my personal beliefs are not really what's important here. I don't, you know, I'm just one person. I may have an opinion, which is really no more valid than somebody else's opinion because it's just an opinion. What's important is what do we know and what do we not know about UFOs? And that's what I like to focus on. And, you know, I don't think what I happen to think they might be is that important in the scheme of things.
Right.
I know people want to know, but, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
but you're a journalist and you're supposed to be objective. So it's really hard for you to say one way or another and without sounding like you're biased.
I need to keep myself in the journalistic frame of mind when I'm talking publicly about the subject. That's just the way it is, you know.
Well, here's another question from Ezekiel, and this is a good one. It has to do with these deathbed confessions, the Philip Corsos out there. There was a bit of a buzz around Richard Dolan's video of this new anonymous source that's come forward. Evidently, he had contacted Linda Howe back in the early to mid-90s. She called him Cooper or Cuper. What do you make of these types of claims? And do you think that, you know, this whole idea that they're asserting is that the executive branch isn't being briefed on extraterrestrial, quote-unquote, affairs? And do you think people like Corso and this Cooper should be excluded from the conversation? Should we somehow vet these people better before we sensationalize their claims? Where do you come down on that?
Well, I mean, as a journalist, the problem I have with the claims is that it's one person telling a story that they can't back up. Yes, it might be fascinating. And yes, it might even be true. But if they can't corroborate it in some way with some, you know, by other witnesses or through documents or whatever, it's not useful. I just can't make use of it as a journalist because it's just one person telling a story. And so it's not something you can really bring to the table if you're trying to make a case for UFO evidence. And, you know, there's no way to know whether the guy is legit or not, really, and if he can't back up what he's saying. So you're stuck with a story, and that's it. There's certainly not something that I work with within the realm of material that I consider to be important. But it doesn't mean I don't find them interesting. But so, you know, so you can't do anything with it.
Well, I think one of the arguments people will make is, why would they say this on their deathbed, knowing their time is short or almost non-existent, if it wasn't true? I think that's the only argument you could say. But as you say, if there's no evidence, it's just somebody's story. Maybe something for family to talk about when they remember them.
It could very well be true. I think it's fascinating. But what can you do when you can't prove it? That's the point.
Well, a journalist requires confirmation and then a third, generally a third confirmation before a good journalist will run with any sort of claim or story.
And so
you need at least two other sources.
Right. And so does a member of the political establishment who doesn't even accept that UFOs are real. Yeah, you know, to accept a deathbed confession talking about alien bodies, you know, what are they? They can't relate to that unless you can prove it. So, you know, that's why I don't mean to disrespect those confessions, and they could very well be true. I have no way of knowing, but I can't really make use of them. That's the problem.
I don't know, Leslie, if you had a chance to see the wrap up, the final day of the citizens' hearing on disclosure. But I stated on the show that I thought Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Minister of National Defense, his sort of presentation at the end or his opinions at the end were, I thought, the low point of the whole thing, quoting a questionable abductee and his conversations with aliens and what the aliens are telling us and this sort of thing, and then making the claim that there are four different species running around the planet on Earth. Ezekiel wants to know what you think of that particular way to sum up that event, and how do we curb certain, you know, high-powered individuals' enthusiasm once they do get involved in this? I mean, how can we get them not to become more of a source of the problem here with acceptance of this subject?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I watched the Hellyer, and I was absolutely shocked, to tell you the truth, that he, with what he was saying, just couldn't believe it. And that he was being given a platform to say those things in Washington. You know, it was just, I was very surprised, and I what can I say? I mean, I think it was entirely inappropriate for him to make statements like that in Washington, D.C., et cetera, et cetera. So I was just really, really surprised. And the only way I think we can curb it is to just not provide platforms to people who are going to make statements like that, and to be, you know, require that before people become part of an event that we know what they're going to say, you know, to have some control who's ever organizing the thing. So that inappropriate material is not presented. I mean, that's the only thing you can do. And obviously, in the citizens' hearing, there were absolutely no restrictions. Anybody could just come in and say whatever they wanted. And yeah, I have to say, I was just stunned when I heard Hellyer. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, the guy's very old. He's old.
I tell you, I was trying to tickle my nose so I could come up with the old vaudeville. I was hopping mad standing there just a few feet away from the table. I was at the entire thing filming it for the streaming, and I was incensed. I could not believe it. I saw people in the audience just rolling their eyes, going, "Oh no," holding their heads.
No, I couldn't believe it. I think that the panel eventually had to tell him his time was almost up because he was going on and on. And he started to quote Bin Laden, didn't he? He started talking about 9/11 and Bin Laden, I think.
I know. It was all over the place.
And, you know, I with all due respect, it just was inappropriate for that to have happened. I mean, what can I say?
They lost control. Before we lose control, another question, Chris?
Yeah, this is a really good one, and I'd be very interested to hear about the response to your book since it's been out. This comes from Artyom, who's a longtime poster here at the forum, theparacast.com, and he's given your book a 5-star rating at Amazon, just absolutely loves it. And he says, since the book was written and published, what impact do you think that it's had on people's perceptions, and what sort of feedback, basically, have you been getting from people?
Well, thanks a lot to him. I continue to get very positive feedback, but I mean, especially on Facebook, you know, people keep writing. Plus, it's been translated into like 8 languages around the world, so it's getting more and more play in other countries, including China and Brazil and some pretty big countries, Germany. And I think what matters the most to me is when somebody says to me, which happens quite frequently, that so-and-so, who they know, was a total skeptic about this issue. This one woman just wrote me on Facebook, actually. She said, my husband has never, he's always thought this issue was bunk, and he read your book, and he's now completely changed his position. And I think that's really, this book is useful for persuading people who would otherwise not take the subject seriously when they're just exposed to what's out there all over the Internet, you know. And that's really satisfying to me. And I think it continues to happen that people are continuing to read it. It's still selling fairly well on Amazon, and that it's still influencing people. And that makes me very happy. And, you know, I do get also quite a lot of letters from witnesses, people that want to share sightings with me. Sometimes they're military people. That have never really felt comfortable or never felt they had anybody before that they felt comfortable talking about this with. So, I mean, that happens to me quite a lot.
We'll have Charles Hall joining us after the next segment. Leslie Kane with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget.
a former U.S. military intelligence officer, is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, this is Gary Cooper with Midas Resources Gold and Silver. Don't be surprised when the global elite confiscates money from your bank account one day. They have already very clearly telling you that they're going to do it. With what just happened in Cyprus serving as a blueprint for future bank bailouts, if you are concerned about keeping your money, why not consider storing your wealth in gold and silver? Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130. Together we'll discuss your options of buying gold and silver. Again, the global elite have plans for your money, and it doesn't include you. So call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130, and I will send you a booklet with 10 reasons why gold and silver could be right for you. Again, don't get caught with money in your account when the next bank bailout hits. Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130.
The 9th Annual Health Freedom Expo returns June 7th through June 9th at the Schaumburg Convention Center in Schaumburg, Illinois, featuring over 75 world-renowned doctors, activists, and experts. Meet Dr. Joel Wallach, author of Dead Doctors Don't Lie, actress and activist Daryl Hannah, famed Dr. Patch Adams, women's health expert Dr. Joan Borisenko, GMO activist Jeffrey Smith, and renowned natural health doctor Dr. Joseph Mercola. Sample delicious, healthy foods. Watch award-winning documentaries. Attend exciting panel discussions. Discover the latest natural health products. And be sure to check out the expo hall, filled with 200 exhibitors. Don't forget about the new interactive pavilions and receive free screenings. It's all here under one roof for only $20 a day or $45 for the entire three-day weekend. It costs less than a doctor's visit. But hurry, tickets are going fast. For tickets and info, visit healthfreedomexpo.com or call 888-658-3972. The Health Freedom Expo, your one source for total natural health solutions.
Did you know that gold and silver contain healing properties? It's true. Since the beginning of mankind's history, gold and silver have not only been used as real money, but also for healing our minds and bodies. Utopiasilver.com is your leading source for colloidal silver and colloidal gold, offering supplement protocols that can heal and enhance your health. Protocols for boosting the immune system, insomnia, yeast infections, herpes, and countering the effects of vaccinations and radiation poisoning. And now Utopiasilver.com encourages the use of real money with this buy one, get one free real money special. For details and your colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements, call 888-213-4338 and ask about 50% off for first-time customers. That's 888-213-4338 or visit utopiasilver.com, utopiasilver.com, fighting for liberty and healing one American at a time.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Leslie Kane joining Gene and Chris. You're in the Paracast. By the way, Leslie will be one of the featured speakers before this UFO conference, which is scheduled for June 29th and 30th, sponsored by the Center for UFO Research in Greensboro, North Carolina. We'll remind you about everything a little bit later in the show. Charles Hall joining us in the next segment, where we focus on Rendlesham. Chris, more questions?
Sure. Gene, this one comes from Ellen Dill, who's a longtime poster at the forum.theparacast.com. And this involves that really interesting controversy surrounding the military parade down in Santiago with what some people feel were two objects flying by. Have you heard any sort of developments on the analysis of that film? And what can we take from that? Was it just a couple of insects flying by, or were they actually high strange objects traveling at hypersonic speed?
Well, it's a really interesting question, and I've been fascinated by that case. And in case your questioner probably knows that I have 3 articles about it on the Huffington Post website, so I hope anybody who's curious will go there and read those articles. You know, the essence of that case is really that it's not solved, because there's probably been about 5 or 6 scientists, between the scientists in Chile and 2 scientists in America who did in-depth studies of that footage. They all have different conclusions, which I find absolutely fascinating. Some think it definitely could not possibly be an insect, that it was anomalous, some kind of anomalous object, and they state their reasons why. And others state they think it was most likely an insect, and here's why. So it's a mystery, and I think people have to make up their own minds, basically. I mean, in my opinion, if you look at a video of an insect flying, which I have put inside one of my Huffington Post stories, a beetle, which is what it would most likely have been because it had kind of a curved back. And I talked to all these entomologists about it, too. And I said, if this was an insect, what species would it be in Santiago at this time of year? And the only one they could come up with was this tiny little ladybug, which was, it's smaller than the fingernail of your pinky. And I looked at videos of what this ladybug looks like when it's flying. And it has this contraption over its head that's up there all the time, even when its wings are flapping. And you have to go on my article. But it doesn't look at all like the thing at Santiago. So who knows? I mean, I think it's just a fascinating case because the video is so clear. We have great stills of this object. The object showed up in 2 different flybys, looking exactly the same, at the same angle even, to the camera. The likelihood of it being an insect, to me, doesn't seem high, but I'm not a photo analyst, so I'm going to defer to the analysts who have studied the footage. And as I said, their conclusions don't always agree, so there we are.
That's true. Let the experts come up with the analysis and conclusions on that. And I agree. I think we should leave some of this work to the professionals who I think we need more of in this field. I don't think there's enough quality analytical people involved in this field. That's my own personal opinion, with the exception of Bruce McAbee, Jeff Sanyo, and a couple of others. I mean, there's really nobody that you can really go to.
Well, in this case, so we had Bruce McAbee and Richard Haynes both did in-depth studies of that footage, and they're both posted on their websites. And I wrote an article which sort of summarized their findings. And the interesting thing is that they came up with different conclusions, looking at the same material. So
yep.
I guess it's still an anomaly, the object. You could say that.
Well, that's true. It's controversial.
But the question is whether it could be a bug. And I think if you go and look at some images of bugs, there's a lot of stuff about what it would look like if it really were a bug. I personally don't think it looks much like the object in question. But again, I have to defer to the people who studied it. So.
Well, if it's real, it definitely does say something about the brazenness of the phenomenon. It's willing to go anywhere and do anything at any time. Boy, I'll tell you, there was a lot of hardware present that day.
Yep.
Leslie, here's another question that, we at the Paracast pride ourselves in having as well-rounded a listening audience as a show like this could possibly ever want. We do have a lot of skeptical people that tune into our show because we do attempt to be as objective as possible about the subjects we cover here. And that this question has come up in several different ways at theforum.theparacast.com. And that is, how would you respond to the old debunker's question? Why don't we in this day and age with so many cameras and cell phones around have any clear footage of UFOs or related phenomenon? And this goes right to the last question of the sort of ephemeral way that these things show up. We don't have any clear, concrete, cut-and-dried evidence. And why is that with all these cell phones and cameras around now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And I think the point is we do have some very good and very clear photographs of UFOs that have been analyzed in labs. I mean, I've got some of them in my book. But let's say we've got maybe 5 or 6 that are really seem to be legit. One of the reasons, I think, is that when a witness is observing a UFO, and I've talked to so many people who have told me the same thing, if they see something going by and they're like totally awestruck, they're staring at it, they don't want to take their eyes off it, they know that they only have like 15 seconds and the thing's going to be gone. The last thing they think about is trying to find their camera or take a picture of it. They're just too fixated on it. I think that's one of the reasons. But again, nowadays we have people with cell phones right in their pockets. So I think there are a lot more pictures and videos being taken. I mean, I see things every day, you know, that people post and so on. The problem is, so you have a video of something. First of all, none of them are spectacular close-ups, you know, of what we'd really want, of some physical craft that's really obvious. But even the ones that are decent, there's nobody to analyze them. I mean, they just get thrown up on the internet. One person has videotaped something, and it's like, what can you do with that kind of thing? So I think it's a combination of things, but there certainly are a lot more people taking videos now and taking photographs, and I'm just sort of waiting for one to come along. That, you know, but the UFOs don't come that close. You take out a cell phone, the camera, the quality's not going to be very good.
Right.
That's the other problem.
Yeah, that is a problem.
It's just not going to be good. I mean, and so, you know, maybe one day this is going to be a low-flying UFO, because people do see them sometimes very low down. But they're usually just so freaked out or awestruck or terrified or whatever that they don't take a picture.
In addition to that, sometimes they'll even have a malfunction, or the battery will all of a sudden be dead. I hate when that happens.
Right. Or the picture will just be a blaze of light, or it'll be, you know, the radiation will ruin the image, like what happened with Jim Pennison's picture of the object at Rendlesham. I mean, maybe the picture doesn't come out. It's a very legitimate question. I puzzled by it myself. I think there are all these reasons, but it still seems like there should be something. We do have great pictures, though. I mean, when people say we don't have them, they're all fuzzy. The debunkers always like to say, we have nothing but fuzzy pictures of lights in the sky. Well, that isn't true. And the photograph from Costa Rica is an example. That I think is one of the best photographs we've got, and it's absolutely legit because it was taken from a government airplane, a government mapping plane in Costa Rica, and it's crystal clear because it was on a large negative. And I don't know if you're familiar with the picture, but I have it in my book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know,
it was a mapping with an automatic camera that was featured
looking
in a couple of Jacques Vallée's books. Yeah, there is some question about
it,
though.
There are good photos. There are?
Yeah. Ray Stanford has looked at it and thinks he's come up with a possible explanation for it. But it is, you're right, it is crystal clear, and we should be able to glean some really good information from it. I'd like to see more analysis done on that, and somebody really, really take that image apart.
Vallée and Haynes did a study on it, but I'm interested in to know what Ray Stanford's was.
Yeah.
Okay, we have Charles Halt coming up in our next segment with Leslie Kane, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
There's been a disaster, and most of you don't even realize the serious concern for all of us. Alex Jones has warned you for years to get the most important supply you can for your liberty, freedom, and security, and that's food. We thought the danger was drought, or food diverted to our gas tanks, or food so expensive that we'd all need financial assistance to afford it, or our food being sold to other countries. But here's the most effective way you'll lose your liberty and security without a fight: government regulation. The do-it-yourself public services of many LDS Mormon food storage canneries can no longer be provided. This, along with the recent private gardening and farming regulations and additional government control of food supplies and resources, says food is the ultimate priority. eFoods Direct will provide free shipping on all food orders until further notice. Call 800-409-5633 or on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We're joined this segment on the Paracast with Gene and Chris by Colonel Charles Halt. We're going to ask him some key questions about the Rendlesham case, and also we're going to ask your questions from the audience. Leslie Kane stays on, and she's going to contribute some of her observations and maybe a few questions. Colonel Halt, welcome to the Paracast.
Well, thank you.
We're glad to have you here after all these years. And I think the first question to ask, because a lot of our listeners have heard about the Rendlesham case, are there things you can tell us that people tend to get wrong or don't understand about the case?
How much time do you have?
There's so much
misinformation and disinformation out there. A lot of skeptics don't know or understand the whole scenario, I guess is the best way to put it, and they shoot from the hip.
Well, let's do our best, okay?
Okay.
So give us a few key areas where we're getting it wrong about Rendlesham.
Well, I keep hearing this lighthouse stuff. You know, I could see the lighthouse. The lighthouse was visible once we got to the edge of the farmer's field. It was off to the right about 30 degrees. I saw the object in the field between myself and the party I was with and the farmer's house. And the object was glowing brightly and reflecting off the windows of the farmer's house, which was on our side of the house. There's no way the lighthouse could have reflected light off the windows.
Okay, now that is, of course, Colonel Hogg, a common skeptical impression of the episode. That's what they've been claiming, that it's a lighthouse.
Yeah, well, do you ever see a lighthouse move through the forest?
Well, not this year, but I understand that works well on TV with special effects.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Okay, how about another misconception of Rendlesham?
Well, there's a lot of confusion because the primary witnesses from the first night were brought in and, how shall I say, interrogated with hypnosis and sodium pentothal, or that's what they assume it was, some type of an injection. And between what happened to them there and in the forest, they are so confused today that I'm not sure they know which ends up.
Which particular witnesses are we talking about?
I'm talking about, I don't even want to call them a witness, Larry Warren, Jim Peniston, and John Burroughs.
So you're saying basically what they report, and we've had Burroughs on the Paracast a couple of years back. The things they remember, they're misremembering because of the sodium pentothal and because of the hypnosis?
Or because of what happened to them in the forest. Or quite possibly later they had regression hypnosis. I don't know. I know the stories have changed, locations have changed, all sorts of things have changed.
Well, that becomes particularly discouraging.
It certainly is. It's very frustrating.
Give me a couple of examples here. What specific things can we point to that they are misremembering that you know to be other than what they say?
Several times Jim Peniston and I and John Burroughs were back on location there doing some filming and working with some producers on certain productions. We always went to the same site that I was taken to the first time I went into the forest. Several, 3 or 4 years ago, Jim and I were back with MPH doing a production for them, and he went out the east gate and took us to the right about, oh, I don't know, a couple hundred yards, oh, a half a mile, quarter mile from the original site, and swore that was the right site. And he said, this is what the trees looked like when we were there. Well, Vince Turkettle, who was the forester at the time the incident occurred, was with us. And Vince said, these trees are only 25 years old. It couldn't have been here. Well, I already knew that, but I didn't say much. But just one example. If you look at Jim's notebook, the notebook didn't appear until about 25 or 30 years later. Recently, I've run across someone who met the gentleman that rode on the bus back from the site with Jim when Jim came in from Gardmont back to the base. And Jim described what happened and pulled his notebook out and drew a sketch in the notebook. Herman Bertolino. There was nothing else in the notebook that he could see. The date in the notebook is dated, an incident occurred, time and date are wrong. It has it on the 27th of December, not the night of the 25th, morning of the 26th. There's a whole lot of inconsistencies. Something happened to them. There's no doubt about that. That's well documented. But, you know, things have changed. They've been, how should I say, had.
Well, that's a good question here, too. Do you think it's the government investigators who screwed the pooch, as they say, or do you think it's the nature of the phenomenon they encountered that impacted their memories?
I can't answer that because I don't know. Maybe a combination thereof. I don't really know.
How did your superiors handle your particular experiences here? How did they treat you?
I didn't have any real problems. I was kind of in shock, you know, anticipating the worst, I guess, is the best way to put it. No, they believed me, and we kind of just put it to bed, if you know what I mean. I wrote the memo to the Ministry of Defense. That was not supposed to be released, and as far as we were concerned, it all went away, which it did, and it reappeared 3 years later.
Well, the other issue to ask about there, did it impact your career in the Air Force?
Fortunately not, because the intervening 3 years I got promoted. I'm certain if it had come out and I'd made the papers and there'd been a big splash about it, I probably wouldn't have been promoted. There's a stigma that goes with this. Once you get involved in something like this, it's sort of like a tar baby. You touch it, you don't ever get rid of it.
I think a lot of us have had that feeling.
I never wanted to get involved.
Baby.
I did everything I could to keep it from being released. When I got the call from the acting 3rd Air Force Commander, Pete Bent, saying we're going to have to release your memo, I begged him not to. And I told him, your life and mine will never be the same. Please don't release it. Burn it. Those were my exact words to him. And his answer was, I've got to release it.
Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't seeking this to become public. It's one of those things I didn't need.
Yeah, so that definitely is, you would not have come forward unless you had been outed, in other words?
We wouldn't be talking now.
Right. What do you think of Peniston's claim of touching the object and being downloaded with 12 pages of binary code? This comes out years later. I've always kind of scratched my head about that one. Well, where do you come down on that?
Well, I took the original statements from him, and he didn't mention anything about that. But you have to keep in mind, he was in shock at that time. They all were. He was so nervous, I'm telling you, he just was, all he wanted to do was get away from it. It's possible that he was worked on and part of it was fabricated. It's part that they may have covered part of it up. I don't know. I wasn't present. I do know there was a concerted effort to contain it, I guess is the best way to put it, and then at a later stage to discredit it.
Yeah. Well, that goes with the territory, no question about it.
We've even had a person come forward on Coast to Coast Radio and in correspondence with one of my friends who's been working with me on putting some stuff together on it and claimed to be Joe Wilson, who was assigned there from Hurlburt Field with special classified ground effect radar and this, that, and the next thing. And he was out in the field, and he mentioned working with me, and he knew awful lot about what was going on at the base and who was there and whatnot, but there was no Colonel Wilson there. There is no Colonel Wilson. I've done a lot of research on that. He mentions names of other people that don't exist, too, and more disinformation.
Oh, boy. Well, we've got a lot of questions from our listeners who are fascinated, obviously, with the Rendlesham case, being probably one of the key cases in the annals of this subject. And one question has to do with radar track data, and also the scrambling of fighter aircraft from nearby bases. We really haven't heard much about the actual real time response in terms of scrambling planes, that sort of thing, actual radar track data. To your knowledge, I mean, what sort of smoking gun scientific data do we have in that regard? And how do you address the lack of planes being scrambled?
Well, I can't answer for the planes. I can tell you this. I was in constant contact with the command post through the radio net. We did have difficulties with communications, but I was pretty much in contact with them, describing what was going on, what I saw, asking them to look in the sky, asking them to contact RAF Watersham, which was Eastern Radar, we called it. They had air defense for our sector. I asked them to call the tire, and they even called Heathrow. Everybody came back and said to me from the command post, they don't see anything. Well, later, I find, years later, that RAF Watersham did pick up something on their radar. They did have a track that dropped into the forest. And later when the air traffic controllers at Bentwaters, and they've come forward with signed sworn statements now that they're retired, that they visually saw the object, they watched it, they saw it go across the scope at high speed, they saw it drop into the forest where we were. How about that?
We got to do our break. How about that? Colonel Charles
okay,
Hall.
Take your break.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Okay, we have permission now from the Colonel. Colonel Charles Hall joining us with Leslie Kane and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Virtually anyone can hack your cell phone and track your calls, your texts, your emails, your every movement, but only if they can detect a signal. Stay one step ahead of hackers and Big Brother with a Blockit Pocket, a custom-made pocket infused with pure silver that creates a complete Faraday enclosure for your cell phone. For free shipping to the Lower 48, visit BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com. Enhancing health and privacy.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Being prepared against possible food shortages and economic collapse is not complicated. Just remember two words, disaster, stuff. Add.com after those two words and you've got just one site for all your preparedness needs. DisasterStuff.com prepares your family against food shortages with Linden Farms freeze-dried foods in buckets or Gourmet Reserves freeze-dried food in number 10 cans, both with free shipping. Purify and rid your water of contaminants with a Big Berkey or other Berkey system and get free shipping, plus a water level spigot or fluoride filter at cost. And protect your radios and other electronics from EMPs with our EMP Faraday bags, starting at just $5.90. When the food shortages and economic instability happens, be ready with all your stuff from DisasterStuff.com. Just remember two words, DisasterStuff.com. Freedom through self-reliance and personal responsibility.
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs knows the importance of proper digestion.
Make sure you take a look at the ultimate enzyme product. They're made with bile salts and fat digestion enzymes and protein digestive enzymes. And not only do the ultimate enzymes give you obvious benefits for digestion, but they can also help keep your blood flowing through your circulatory system. As most of you probably know by now, thick, sludgy, clotting blood is a serious risk factor for heart disease and stroke. Clearly, inappropriate and excessive blood clotting is a major health issue, and thick, sludgy blood is not just about heart health either. Sludgy blood can compromise oxygenation and nutrient delivery to all your cells and tissues and organs, and ultimately lead to almost any health issue you can name.
Concerned about proper digestion and heart health? Order Ultimate Enzymes by calling 866-735-2470. That's 866-735-2470 or on the web at brightsidemen.com. That's brightsidemen.com. Order today.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
We continue with Charles Halt, one of the key figures in the Rendlesham UFO case. We have Leslie Kane, investigative journalist, with Gene and Chris in the PowerCast. Before we go on, Leslie, you have any comments to offer or questions of Colonel Halt?
Not really. I mean, I'm utterly fascinated by, of course, what he's saying, and I'm just sitting here listening. So I can't think of, I think the questions you guys are asking him is great. The recent developments of the radar people coming forward that he just mentioned is really, really significant. Really significant. I mean, Chuck, the reason they didn't come forward earlier was because you mentioned that they were retired after they came forward with this, that they just feel that they couldn't do it because they've been told not to? Or
their statements are that at the time when they saw it, they said to each other, we didn't see anything, because they had had experience with other controllers who reported UFOs and had gotten decertified. And to get decertified as an air traffic controller is the kiss of death. In other words, that's the end of your career.
Wow.
There was also an officer in the tower, and I know who he was. He doesn't want to come forward. He doesn't want to talk, but he was a supervisor of flying. Now, what was he doing in the tower at 2 a.m. in the morning or whatever time it was, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, when we weren't flying and hadn't flown? What was he doing with a command radio? He had a command radio. Some good questions.
Wow, very good question. Well, where did that data end up? Do you know, is it still under some sort of veil of secrecy? Is there any way that we can do an FOIA?
What data are you talking about?
The Air Force tracking data.
There's no record of it now other than what the air traffic controllers. They distinctly remember it because of what was going on. They remember us going into the forest. They knew there was some activity because the gentleman and the officer in the tower, the major in the tower with them, had the command radio on, and they could hear me, overhear me talking to the command post. So they knew some of the things that were going on.
How about the local UK police? Have you were they interviewed by Air Force personnel? You don't hear much about the locals' response in terms of law enforcement.
The locals, when they did come out, they were out at least two occasions, perhaps more. And what I'm told, because I wasn't present, when they saw the indentations in the ground that were supposed to be made by the craft when it landed, they said, looks like rabbit scratching or hens nesting. Well, you don't get three indentations in hard-packed, nearly frozen silt clay or sandy soil in wintertime that are equidistant apart and all identical. They didn't want anything to do with it. It's the old, hey, I didn't see anything.
Wow. This comes from our sometime panelists, Gogs Mackay in Scotland, a longtime poster here at the Paracast.forum.com. Are you being prevented from revealing more about Rendlesham due to your security oath? Are there things that you literally can't go public with?
No, not actually. Now, if you ask me some technical questions or what was on the base, there are some areas where I can't go. But when I left the military, I had a very high classification. Security clearance is way beyond top secret. I was debriefed, and a lot of things I can't talk about, but nothing that really pertains to this particular incident. I specifically asked, what about the Bentwaters incident and what occurred there? And the debriefer said, huh? And I said, well, there was a supposed UFO incident in 1980 and so on and so forth. They said, and they shrugged their shoulders.
Wow. That's surprising.
I didn't answer one of your earlier questions. You asked me about aircraft being launched. We had no capability at the base at the time. We had the A-10s there. There were fighter aircraft at Milton Hall and Lake and Heath and different places. So I don't know if any of them were on alert, because I can't speak for that. I know nobody got into the air.
Yeah, you would think with the actual radar tracking data of some sort of incursion like that, that's the first thing that would happen.
The command post didn't know because the tower said they don't see anything. They don't know anything. And Eastern Radar didn't say anything. So they had no knowledge.
Shouldn't this have shown up on the Brits' radars, Mendenhall and others?
Apparently it did, but they didn't make any issue of it.
So they called you guys and said, hey, you know, what's going on over there? And they got an all-clear signal.
No. One of the controllers later admitted that he saw something on the screen. But there was no mention, and I didn't learn this until several years later.
Okay, I understand. Well, what do you make of the MOD maintaining that UFOs in general and the events at Rendlesham were of no defense significance when somebody with any brain cells can see that they're supremely relevant? Again, this is a question from Gogs.
Well, that's the same approach that our government generally takes.
Yeah. They sounds familiar.
And maybe it'll go away.
Yeah.
Maybe we can explain it.
Well, this leads to another question from Goggs, Colonel. Do you have any views over the supposed secrecy group that may exist to control UFO information? And you will be aware of Lord Hill Norton believes such a group must exist. Even as chief of the UK defense staff, he felt he was being stonewalled when trying to investigate UFO matters. Do you think such a group exists?
I do. And I did, by the way, have correspondence back and forth with Lord Hill Norton before he passed away. And I wish I'd had an opportunity to meet him, because I share a lot of his views.
Hmm. Well, that's one for the conspiracy side of this. I've always felt that there has to be some sort of...
Well, conspiracy is not real simple.
It's true.
I'm to realize there's probably, I would say, maybe a half a dozen to a dozen agencies that collect information and pass it somewhere. I'd be willing to bet, this is just a guess, that there's an agency that's a civilian contract agency made up with people from former or current government people, high-level military perhaps, some scientists, that's under contract through a company such as, now I don't mean this is a company such as SCAIC or Lockheed or somebody like that, has a contract that handles whatever is necessary to be handled as far as containing it. That's my personal opinion.
That makes sense. Then you talk
that way they can keep it out of anybody prying and getting into it through freedom of information or anything else.
Right. I've always felt that there's a lot in the private sector just being held there because of its inaccessibility. But you talk mm-hmm. to someone like retired Colonel John Alexander, who claims
he's a colonel, by the way.
Pardon me.
And John's a good personal friend of mine. John wrote a very good book. John Alexander and I go way back. I've known John for probably 25 years. He was the first person who I thought was debriefed me informally. Actually, he was poking around on his own trying to get information when he was running the Long Lethal Weapons Program. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with John Alexander. In fact, I had lunch with him last week.
Well, he's been on the PowerCast, and, of course, he's also had debates with people like Stanton Friedman over whether the government has guilty knowledge about the UFO phenomenon. What do you think?
There's some knowledge somewhere, to put it that way.
So you think there are secrets to be had there, or are they just as mystified as the rest of us?
There are secrets to be had, but I don't think you'll find them, and you will not get access to them until it's determined by whoever that it's time.
Well, Colonel, what do you make of John Alexander never mentioning the NSA in the entire book? Wouldn't you think that would be one of the first places you'd try to poke around?
That would be one of the first places you'd poke around. I can tell you that, you know, the NSA is a very interesting organization, and we'll leave it at that. They have a lot of compartmentalized programs.
Yeah, well, because you're obviously you've been involved in what is an historic event in terms of this phenomenon and reporting on this phenomenon. How have your views changed? This comes from Ezekiel. What do you think of the anonymous Cooper and his deathbed confession that was at the citizens' hearing on disclosure recently in Washington D.C.? Richard Dolan had this unnamed person on there who had some fantastic claims. Are you aware of those claims? And what do you think of people like that and Philip Corso, for instance?
Well, I really don't know them that well. Keep in mind, I don't belong to any UFO organization. I don't subscribe to any of their magazines or anything. I do get an awful lot of stuff sent to me unsolicited, or people, you know, call me or send me an email and whatnot, and legitimate people I'll talk with and respond to them. The fringe element, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, I just kind of blow it off. I put this on the shelf. I don't worry about it every day. There's no doubt in my mind that we are not alone. There is some type of intelligent whatever that can play with us, appear, disappear at will, do all kinds of phenomenal things, influence people, do strange things that we don't understand, and it's just beyond our understanding, I guess is the best way to put it.
So you would expect then that UFOs are probably caused by visitors from other planets?
Either that or another dimension, possibly. There's been a lot of talk about that lately, and certainly some possibilities there.
As a former military person, do you find that your friends look at you and say, are you sure you haven't gone off the deep end?
Well, I get a little bit of that, but most of the people know me now, and they know that I don't dwell on it. I'm responding to you, but I didn't search you, I'd keep in mind. I'm not out on a pedestal every day. I'm going to do a program with Leslie here in June in North Carolina, which promises to be very interesting and provide a lot of information to people that are concerned.
But you were asked, which is the important thing. We'll get back to more of this in a moment. Colonel Charles Hault joining us with Leslie Kane. Now, coming next week on the PowerCast, we'll be featuring Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner to talk about a new book called Human Alien Contact Reports, New Case Studies and Evidence Support Alien Abduction. More to come with Gene and Chris. You're in
the PowerCast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
If you love pineapple as much as I do, I've got some great news for you. You're going to love this offer from Freeze Dry Guy. For the month of May, Freeze Dry Guy is offering the finest quality freeze-dried pineapple. A case of six number 10 cans yielding 114 servings at a special introductory price. First quality freeze-dried pineapple grown and packed with nothing added. This healthy treat works wonders with salad. It's great for snacking, hiking, hunting, camping, and for adding to your food storage program. And please note that Freeze Dry Guy's foods will store on your shelf for decades. Order now and get free shipping to your front door within the lower 48 states. This special introductory price is good until May 31st. For more information and a free complete product list, go to freezedryguy.com or phone 866-404-3663. freezedryguy.com, 866-404-3663.